Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastomavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 174. The personality of Godhead replied, My dear Lord Brahma, O great Lord born from the lotus flower, just as it is dangerous to feed milk to a snake, so it is dangerous to give benedictions to demons, who are by nature ferocious and jealous. I warn you not to give such benedictions to any demon again. Narad Muni continued, O King Yudhishthira, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not visible to an ordinary human being, spoke in this way, instructing Lord Brahma. And so Brahma is done like this, and Krishna, in dealing with it, kept it in place. Right? He kept his benediction in place, and then, on top of that, then killed the demon. But he's instructing that he shouldn't be like that. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. It's going, but at the same time, it shouldn't be like that. So it's accommodating, but it's not without standard. It's not that it's with standard and non-accommodating. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Shouldn't we say that Lord Brahma was actually obliged? Because usually we say that they're like office holders. If you present all the documents, they're obliged to give the benediction.
Same time he's doing the austerities, it's not that necessarily he has to deal in that way. Otherwise, why would Krishna say it?
Because Krishna is the one who is kind of independent. He may give, he may not give.
No, but it's still his creation, and it's supposed to run how he likes it. So the Brahma gave, then, you know, that's not so good. Because he said, I can't give you immortality, so I'm going to do these things. Mm-hmm. But the point is, you know, how you say, well, why is he obliged to go and do that? He's done the austerities, it's creating problem for the demigods, but he just has to stop the austerities. You know what I'm saying? Is that going to ruin your plan to worship the demigods and get whatever you want because Krishna may not do it? Then, being worshipped by Brahma, the Lord disappeared from the place. Prahlad Maharaj then worshipped and offered prayers to all the demigods, such as Brahma, Shiva, and the Prajapatis, who are all parts of the Lord. Thereafter, along with Sukracharya and other great saints, Lord Brahma, whose seat is on the lotus flower, made Prahlad the king of all the demons and giants in the universe. O King Yudhishthira, after all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma were properly worshipped by Prahlad Maharaj, they offered Prahlad their utmost benedictions and then returned to their respective abodes, 31 to 34. Did it say, what was the word for giants? The Sanskrit? No, okay. Notice the giants.
Somewhere there.
Okay. So these giants work for the moon, and they make all the, I say, vegetables grow nicely. And that, so. They work in a valley. They're green.
Green, and then there's a little one too, and sprout.
And maybe, okay, yeah.
You don't know the sprout.
No, that's a new
giant.
One. Yeah, no, that's a new one. Verses 35 to 50. Narad Muni concludes the story of Jaya and Vijaya. Thus the two associates of Lord Vishnu had become Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. The sons of Diti were both killed. By illusion, they had thought that the Supreme Lord, who was situated in everyone's heart, was their enemy. Srila Prabhupada comments. The discourse concerning Lord Nrisimhadev and Prahlad Maharaj began when Maharaj Yudhisthira asked Narada how Shishupal had merged in the body of Krishna. Shishupal and Dantavaka were the same Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Here Narada Muni is relating how in three different births the associate of Lord Vishnu were killed by Lord Vishnu himself. First they were the demons Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Narada Muni continued. Being cursed by the Brahmanas, the same two associates took birth again as Kumbhakarna and the ten-headed Ravana. These two Rakshasas were killed by Lord Ramachandra's extraordinary power, pierced by the arrows of Lord Ramachandra. Both Kumbhakarna and Ravana lay on the ground and left their bodies, fully absorbed in thought of the Lord, just as they had in their previous births as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. They both took birth again in human society as Shishupal and Dantavakra, and continued in the same enmity towards the Lord. It is they who merged into the body of the Lord in your presence. Srila Prabhupada comments. Vairanu Bhandhena, acting like the Lord's enemy, is also beneficial for the living entity. Kamad Dveshad Bhayat Snehad, whether in lusty desire, anger, fear, or envy of the Lord, how, somehow or other, as recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami, Tasmat Kenap Yupa Yena, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.132. One should become attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and ultimately achieve the goal of returning home back to Godhead. What then is to be said of one who is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a servant, friend, father, mother, or conjugal lover? And so any of those positions will benefit you, right? Because you're absorbed in the Lord. So if that's giving you so much benefit, then what about the benefit that's coming of those who relate as servant, friend, father, mother, or conjugal lover? Their benefit is so much greater. Right? So the whole point is if that's so much greater, then why wouldn't we do that? Right? Because the point is you have to be fully absorbed. So in these other aspects, you can become fully absorbed very nicely. You become an enemy of the Lord, be fully absorbed. Okay, if you can do it, nice. But the point is it will only get you up to that point of liberation. So, but benefit is there. You've gotten out of the material entanglement. Right? Does that make sense? But we only see a few people do it, so the other one is more recommended. But the point being is that being absorbed in the Lord is so great. That's the main point. So hearing, chanting, remembering, that's what we're trying to do. So then in doing that, we see that just doing that, even those who are inimical are getting benefit, let alone those who are not inimical. Right? So it's almost like in the negative, showing that it's the positive is good. Does that make sense? The positive is good. Even the negative is good, but the positive is so much better. Now, it's not recommended that we all become demons like that. We already started that way. Now we're trying to, and we're not getting anywhere. So now we'll take up this other path. Right? Narada Muni continued, not only Shishupal and Dantavakra, but also many, many other kings who acted as enemies of Krishna attained salvation at the time of death. Because they thought of the Lord, they received spiritual bodies and forms the same as His. Just as worms captured by a black drone attain the same type of body as the drone. By devotional service, pure devotees who incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead receive bodies similar to His. This is known as Sarupya Mukti. Although Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieved the same result. Everything you asked me about how Shishupal and others attained salvation, although they were inimical, has now been explained to you by me. In this narration about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, various expansions or incarnations of the Lord have been described, and the killing of the two demons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, has also been described. Srila Prabhupada comments. The Krishna consciousness movement is spreading all over the world with two aims: to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to kill all the pretenders who falsely present themselves as avatars. The preachers of the Krishna conscious movement must carry this conviction very carefully within their hearts and kill the demons who in many tactful ways vilify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. If we take shelter of Nrisimhadeva and Prahlad Maharaj, it will be easier to kill the demons who are against Krishna and thus establish Krishna supremacy. Right? So the point is we're trying to remove this demoniac mentality. Right? Because in the Kali Yuga, the demon and the devotee are residing in the same place, or the demon and the demigods. Right? In Satya Yuga, they were in different planetary systems. Right? In the Treta Yuga, as we see Hiranyaksha and Hiranyaka, they're just different planetary systems. Then, with Ravana and Kumbhakarna, they're on different continents. Right? Then in Dwapara Yuga, they're in different families. Right? But in Kali Yuga, they're in the same body. Right? So then one's trying to destroy the demoniac mentality by proper association, preaching Krishna consciousness like this. So that's the point of the movement. How to remove the demoniac mentality and establish Krishna consciousness. Narad Muni continued, this narration describes the characteristics of the great and exalted devotee Prahlad Maharaj, his staunch devotional service, his perfect knowledge, and his perfect detachment from material contamination. It also describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the cause of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers has described the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and has also described how the various abodes of the demigods and demons, regardless of how material or opulent, are destroyed by the mere direction of the Lord. The principles of religion by which one can actually understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called Bhagavad Dharma. In this narration, therefore, which deals with these principles, actual transcendence is properly described. One who hears and chants this narration about the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is certainly liberated from material bondage without fail. Prahlad Maharaj was the best among exalted devotees. Anyone who, with great attention, hears this narration concerning the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, the killing of Hiranyakashipu, and the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nrisimhadeva, surely reaches the spiritual world, where there is no anxiety. Narad Muni continued, my dear Maharaj Yudhishthira, all of you, the Pandavas, are extremely fortunate, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, lives in your palace just like a human being. Great saintly persons know this very well, and therefore they constantly visit this house. Right? So they're visiting Yudhishthira's house because Krishna stays there. Right? So one, it's either Krishna will be there when they go to visit, or it's like a place of pilgrimage. So just by visiting Yudhishthira's house, because Krishna resides there, so that it's a holy place. Yes?
I was wondering this question. After Prahlad Maharaj was enslaved and thrown as king, did all the demons become devotees?
It appears from something where else that it mentions that they, like his mother, then forget with time. They forget with time. You know, they're distracted by so many other things. So at that time they became devotees. But how many remain devotees, how much it spread. But in any case, it appears during his rule you didn't hear of any difficulty. Right? Because I think he ruled until the end of the Manvantara, right? Like that. And then after that, then Bali Maharaj was his grandson. You know, at some point he was the king. Like that. But he ruled until then. So during that time, you know, who knows? But the point is he's preaching, things are going nicely. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Oh, Prahlad was fortunate to see the Lord, but we are unfortunate. In this way, Yudhishthira Maharaj lamented. Narada replied, you are more fortunate than Prahlad, than me, his guru, than other devotees, than previous members of your dynasty like Yadu and Puru, then the sages like Vashishta, Marichi, Kasyapa, and then Brahma and Shiva. You are the most fortunate among all jivas. The sages who purify the planet by showing themselves come to your house to make themselves successful, because secretly, taking the human form, the Param Brahman always resides in your houses without your calling him. because he is attracted to you. He does not personally live in human form in the houses of Prahlad and others, and the sages do not come there to see him in order to become successful. So there they're just kind of, because the Lord comes in his, you know, his original human form. And so that has the wonderfulness, the sweetness, and all that. So the sages come to do that, to take part. So Krishna comes, he lives there. It's not that they call him there, you know, do great yajnas and do different things like that to try to attract the Lord. No, he's just attracted by their devotional mood. So basically any excuse that there is that he can come, then he comes and visits. Right? Same time the devotees are attracted to him in Dwarka, so then he lives there. Like that. So, yeah. Narad Muni continues. The impersonal Brahman is Krishna himself, because Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman. He is the origin of the transcendental bliss sought by great saintly persons. Yet he, the Supreme Person, is your most dear friend and constant well-wisher, and is intimately related to you as the son of your maternal uncle. Indeed, he is always like your body and soul. He is worshipable, yet he acts as your servant and sometimes as your spiritual master. Exalted persons like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. May the Lord, who is always worshipped by the protector of all devotees, by great saints who observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service and renunciation, be pleased with us. 49-50. Srila Prabhupada comments, the absolute truth is sought by different persons in different ways, yet he remains inconceivable. Nonetheless, devotees like the Pandavas, the Gopis, the cowherd boys, Mother Jashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan do not need to practice conventional processes of meditation to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For he remains with them through thick and thin. Therefore, a saint like Narada, understanding the difference between transcendentalists and pure devotees, always prays that the Lord will be pleased with him. So the others, they're meditating on the Lord by these different methods. And this way, then, the Lord is with them. But these other devotees mentioned, like the Pandavas, the Gopis, the cowherd boys, they simply serve Krishna, and because of that, Krishna is always with them. Right? Does that make sense? So the others are getting benefit, but this one has that sweetness to it, that personalness to it. The other one is, yes, as Paramatma is there, as Brahman is there, but here is Bhagavan, he's always with them, out of his choice. Because they're always absorbed in devotional service. So devotional service is the best. So. Verses 51 to 70. The battle between Lord Shiva and Maya Dhanava.
That's the word for giant, by the way, Dhanava. The word for giant was Dhanavanam. In the verse, giants.
Giants, Dhanavanam.
Yeah, so the Dhanavas are the giants.
Oh, okay, the demons and the Dhanavas. Right. Okay. Oh, because Dhanavas are always big, I guess. Okay. That works. Narad Muni continued, my dear King Yudhishthira, long, long ago in history, a demon known as Maya Dhanava, who was very expert in technical knowledge, reduced the reputation of Lord Shiva. In that situation, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saved Lord Shiva. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Usually say that Dhanavas are more kind of gross and mm-hmm. deities more refined. Maya Dhanava seems to be quite refined as an architect, artist.
But it's technical knowledge.
Oh.
I mean, so technical knowledge is not considered that high grade of knowledge. May be very sophisticated, but it's not that high of grade. It's not like knowledge about the absolute truth, or knowledge about Brahman, or about the rituals. Or, you understand? Because the technical knowledge, this can get you into a lot of problem. You know, from what I've heard is that Maya Dhanava offered it to Arjuna, but Krishna told him, don't take it. He said, I'll teach you all this technical knowledge. You know, because then you can do so many things to that. Because you see, when Arjuna, when he's fighting with other kings and that, they're fighting back with arrows and javelins and like this. But when he was fighting with the demons, they were, you know, shooting rockets and bullets and all kinds of things at him. You know, so there is methods of these things that are done by technology. Right? And so then he's saying, is that it's... Does that make sense? Yeah. But it doesn't mean within Donovans there's not more sophisticated. But it's just in general they tend to be, from what I understand, because they're giants, they're a different group. Right? They tend to be.
So they live in a different planet, or not necessarily?
I don't know. You always hear of them together, but they're just different. They're different groups, different species within, but they all relate together. Srila Prabhupada comments: Lord Shiva is known as Mahadeva, the most exalted demigod. Thus, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that although Lord Brahma did not know the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva could have known them. This historical incident proves that Lord Shiva derives power from Lord Krishna, the Parabrahman. Maharaj Yudhishthir said, for what reason did the demon Mayadhanava vanquish Lord Shiva's reputation? How did Lord Krishna save Lord Shiva and expand his reputation again? Kindly describe these incidents.
Regarding Brahma, he didn't know the glory. But Shiva could have known. On what basis that Brahma is Diva and Shiva is Shiva?
That's there, but also just he's the greatest of the Vaishnavas, so he may know more. So, yeah. See, it's not that they don't know, but it's just that there's so much more to know. So you see, Prahlad Maharaj, then in his understanding, he could bring out so much more because of his position as a devotee. So it's not that because he's Brahma he knows, or that he's Shiva he knows, but it's here as Shiva could have known. There's that verse: somebody knows, somebody may know, somebody knows, somebody.
I know. Yeah. What was it? Yes, that knows. I know.
And somebody else may or may not know.
That was Vyasada, was may or may not know. What about him?
I know. And aham veti, shiva veti, jato veti, na veti.
Vyasada may or may not know.
May or may not know. So he knows, Shiva knows?
Shiva may not
know. Yes, he says about Vyas.
He may or may not know.
Vyas may or may not know.
But Shiva?
What is the verse? Can you just repeat?
Vyasu veti na vetiva. That is the...
Vyasu veti na vetiva means Vyas may or may not know.
Yes, but we're trying to figure out about the Shiva part. No, but what's the Sanskrit in the part Sukadev says?
It's actually, as far as I know, somebody else says aham veti, shuka veti, vyasa veti na veti.
Aham veti, shuka veti.
Vyasa veti na veti.
Oh, okay, but they're saying, I know, that person knows.
I know Sukhdev Goswami knows, but Vyasa...
May or may not know.
But who said this?
Okay.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're great devotees, so you're bringing out the point of their being devotees. But at the same time, it's not because of their position, that's why they know him. That's what's being brought out, because it says, even Lakshmi can't please the Lord. That means her position is not why she's pleasing, because of the devotion is why they're pleasing. Right? So that he's Brahma, that doesn't mean that he knows, because there are Brahmas who are not devotees. Right? But if Brahma's a devotee, it's because he's a devotee, then he'll know. Right? And also on this point, Vyas may or may not know, because it depends on what his position is, if he's a devotee or not. But the point is he compiles, like, what's his name? Ashwatthama. He'll be, I think, the next or the one after the Vyas. But I don't think there's any place anywhere where it mentions even the slightest tinge of being a devotee. Right? You know, so but he can do that work of Vyas. You know, he can compile a Veda and see that it all gets done. But then understanding the Veda and all that's something else. Is that make sense?
So it was Lord Shiva that was speaking.
Lord Shiva was speaking.
Because I know the meaning of the Bhagavat, and I know that Shukadeva knows it also, but for Vyasadeva he may or may not know. The Bhagavat can only be known through bhakti, not by mundane intelligence or by reading many commentaries.
And
where
is this from?
Okay.
This is
It's not labeled there.
I think Lord Shiva is telling to Parvati and Vritrasura.
Oh, then it's Vritrasura.
Oh. Vritrasura.
I think it's in 6th canto and in 6th
canto. Oh, okay.
Okay, so he knows. Lord Shiva knows.
Okay, Lord Shiva knows. Okay.
Well, it's listed in Madhulila, chapter 24, 213.
Okay.
So it's
that is authorized in any case.
In Brahma Samhita it is said, I think, to Goswami or Vishnu Chakravarti, they say that sometimes Shiva is Vishnu Tattva, sometimes rare he is Jiva, and sometimes he is what, Shiva his own category. That's what it's said.
Yeah.
So which one we say that knows?
No, the point is it's the devotee knows. Does that make sense? What we're trying to, what the point being made is that as devotees they know, but as demigods they don't necessarily know. Right? But Shiva, because he's the most exalted of the demigods, therefore he could have known. You understand? From the position. But it's because of their devotion, that's how they know. Does that make sense? Because we tend to think that somebody's material qualifications makes them more advanced in devotional service. You know, like, you know, we discussed in the morning, because they, how you say, they have, you know, studied in the modern academy, so therefore that means that they're a scholar and they can, they're so intelligent that they can decide whether, you know, Prabhupada and the acharyas are right or not. But where does that come from? It only comes from their own concept that material qualification then makes you that you know what you're doing. But because you're working with one is Krishna's energy, that unless he gives the blessing, doesn't mean you can do. You can work in one area, doesn't mean you can work in another. Right? Does that make sense? So simply by pleasing the Lord. So the devotee, because he's always pleasing the Lord, and always remembering the Lord, then no matter what he does, that always becomes perfect. But in areas where we remember the Lord, then we may develop nicely, but in areas where we don't remember the Lord, then those will always be a problem. So
can we say that the position doesn't make one know the Lord, but just gives certain whatever knowledge that is required to fulfill it? And only the person who fulfills this or takes this position, that depends on their bhakti.
Yes, that's the point. But because they're being in these positions of demigods, that puts them, because they are working for the Lord, there's a chance that they could, if they applied the devotion, they could very nicely know. But if they don't, they can get distracted. Like Indra, you see, sometimes he's offering really nice prayers, and other times he's completely off. You know, he's fighting against Krishna in the Govardhan Lila. Because just that he loses his intelligence. So it says by material desire, then you lose all intelligence. Right? Before we were talking in context of the spiritual, but also even material is lost when there's too much desire. So here is as just even his ability to function, you know, is lost. So he can't even understand who he is. He thinks he's the king of heaven, so therefore he's the greatest. So then who is this kid? But he can't, you know, why wouldn't they know that the Lord's performing his pastimes? You know, I mean, they already came down when he's in the womb of Devaki and offering prayers. And so then, you know, as far as the demigods go, you know, how many days later was that? 8 days later? And he's forgotten. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that the Lord covers their intelligence. Because even on the material platform, you have to act in a way that it pleases the Lord in his position as Brahman and Paramatma. In other words, he has laws, you follow them, then being pleased, you get your results. But if you try to get your results outside of that, it won't function, it won't happen. Okay. Narad Muni said, when the demigods, who are always powerful by the mercy of Lord Krishna, right? So always by the mercy of Lord Krishna, they're powerful. But they don't act properly in that, then they lose the power. It's gone. When they fought with the Asuras were defeated. And therefore they took shelter of Mayadhanava, the greatest of the demons. Mayadhanava, the great leader of the demons, prepared three invisible residences and gave them to the demons. These dwellings resembled airplanes made of gold, silver, and iron, and they contained uncommon paraphernalia. My dear King Yudhishthira, because of these three dwellings, the commanders of the demons named remained invisible to the demigods. Taking advantage of this opportunity, the demons, remembering their former enmity, began to vanquish the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Thereafter, when the demons had begun to destroy the higher planetary systems, the rulers of those planets went to Lord Shiva, fully surrendered unto him, and said, Dear Lord, we demigods living in the three worlds are about to be vanquished. We are your followers. Kindly save us. The most powerful and able Lord Shiva reassured them and said, Do not be afraid. He then fixed his arrows to his bow and released them towards the three residences occupied by the demons. The arrows released by Lord Shiva appeared like fiery beams emanating from the sun globe and covered the three residential airplanes, which could then no longer be seen. Attacked by Lord Shiva's golden arrows, all the demoniac inhabitants of those three dwellings lost their lives and fell down. Then the great mystic Mayadhanava dropped the demons into a nectarian well that he had created. When the dead bodies of the demons came in touch with the nectar, their bodies became invincible to thunderbolts. Endowed with great strength, they got up like lightning, penetrating clouds. Seeing Lord Shiva very much aggrieved and disappointed, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, considered how to stop this nuisance created by Mayadhanava. Then Lord Brahma became a calf, and Lord Vishnu a cow, and at noon they entered the residences and drank all the nectar in the well. The demons could see the calf and cow, but because of the illusion created by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demons could not forbid them. The great mystic Mayadhanava became aware that the calf and cow were drinking the nectar, and he could understand that this to be the unseen power of providence. Thus he spoke to the demons, who were grievously lamenting, 53-63. Mayadhanava said, What has been destined by the Supreme Lord for oneself, for others, or for both oneself and others, cannot be undone anywhere or by anyone, whether one be a demigod, a demon, a human being, or anyone else. Srila Prabhupada comments, The Supreme Lord is one, Krishna, the Vishnu Tattva. Krishna expands himself into Vishnu Tattva, personal expansions, Swamsa, who control everything. Mayadhanava said, however I plan, you plan, or both of us plan, the Lord has planned what is to happen. No one's plan will be successful without his sanction. We may make our own various plans, but unless they are sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, they will never be successful. Hundreds and millions of plans are made by all kinds of living entities, but without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, they are futile. Narad Muni continued, Thereafter, Lord Krishna, by his own personal potency, consisting of religion, knowledge, renunciation, opulence, austerity, education, and activities, equipped Lord Shiva with all the necessary paraphernalia, such as a chariot, a charioteer, a flag, horses, elephant, a bow, a shield, and arrows. When Lord Shiva was fully equipped in this way, he sat down on the chariot with his arrows and bow to fight with the demons. Srila Prabhupada comments, Although Lord Shiva is very powerful, he lost the battle to the Asuras, and therefore he was morose and disappointed. However, because he is one of the chief devotees of the Lord personally equipped him with all the paraphernalia for war. The devotee, therefore, must serve the Lord sincerely, and Krishna is always in the background to protect him, and, if need be, to equip him fully to fight with his enemy. For devotees, there is no scarcity of knowledge or material requisites for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. Right? So there's no shortage. It's that it's needed, and you can use it properly, then Krishna arranges it. But if by our own plan we're planning for things, and Krishna doesn't sanction, then it won't happen. You know, even Maya Dhanava can figure this one out. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that it's about pleasing the Lord, being always serving the Lord, then whatever's required will be there. If we think about it, something's always there. We may think something else should be there, but the point is that actually necessary? Right? So then it's a matter of, it gets done. And then at other times, without any effort, so many things come. Or even you try for something, it doesn't work and all that, and then something comes along, it's even better. So that's the whole point, is that when the Lord, when he sanctions, they work nice. But just because we sanction it doesn't necessarily mean it gets very far. So,
is he the Lord of the demons?
Is he the Lord of the demons?
I mean, he gives them shelter.
Not so much the demons. No, he's not the one who gives shelter. He gives shelter all the ghosts and all those guys, because nobody wants to deal with them. Like that, generally shelter the demons, Varuna does that. Because they live under the ocean and stuff. That's why he's known as Asura Maya. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Kuvera?
Kuvera, he's a yaksha, so they all get along. His rakshasas, yakshas, they're kind of in one category. Okay. Narad Muni continued, "My dear King Yudhishthira, the most powerful Lord Shiva joined the arrows to his bow, and at noon he set fire to all three residences of the demons and thus destroyed them." Right, because that's the Muhurta? I remember, but the noon Muhurta, then it's always auspicious and it's good for getting things done. Like, you don't have a Muhurta, then you use that noonday one. Like that. Also in Ram's pastime in the war, they also, there were that one was used also. Can't remember what it's called. So, seated in their airplanes in the sky, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems beat many kettle drums. The demigods, saints, pitas, siddhas, and various great personalities showered flowers on the head of Lord Shiva, wishing him all victory, and the apsaras began to chant and dance with great pleasure. O King Yudhishthira, thus Lord Shiva is known as Tripurari, the annihilator of the three dwellings of the demons, because he burnt these dwellings to ashes. Being worshipped by the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva returned to his own abode. The Lord, Sri Krishna, appeared as a human being, yet he performed many uncommon and wonderful pastimes by his own potency. How can I say more about his activities than what has already been said by great saintly persons? Everyone can be purified by his activities, simply by hearing about them from the right source. Srila Prabhupada concludes. Bhagavad Gita and all the Vedic literatures fully explain that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appears in human society as an ordinary human being, but acts very uncommonly for the well-being of the entire world. One should not be influenced by the illusory energy and think Lord Krishna to be an ordinary human being. Those who really seek the absolute truth come to the understanding that Krishna is everything, Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Such great souls are very rare. Nonetheless, if one studies the entire Bhagavad Gita as it is, Krishna is very easy to understand. So that's why it's the Bhagavad Gita as it is, because that form of the Gita you can understand very well. Other forms of the Gita, therefore, basically placating one's material concepts in life, one's own needs. Like Prabhupada said, before he wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is, there were over 700 translations. None of them are making devotees. Why? Because their purpose is simply to make it nice for karma and jnana. They're not trying to give pure bhakti. Right? So that's why then Prabhupada said Gita as it is. And these instructions then are for the length of, as the founder Acharya, then they're for the length of his mission. Just like Madhva's instructions still work today. Ramanuja's still work today. The Nimbarkis are following their founders after 5,000 years. They still work. Right? So that's the whole point. It's not that they ever get old. They're eternal. That's why they're the founder. It's not that he just started something, you know, like this, and someone else starts something else. No. The founder Acharya is something unique, special. Yes.
We say that nowadays it's the preaching, even though it's based on Bhagavad Gita, but it gets in some different
Yes, and
directions.
then what is it, and what's the result?
So what's the point?
That's the point, is this. One is either no one's making devotees.
Well, they are making lots of devotees.
Or, yeah, and how much is pure devotion important to them? That's the thing, is if that's important, then we say that that's the quality we're looking for. Otherwise, just that one's inclined towards and nice like that, that technically in, you know, by our position and all that, there's all, what's the glory like that? Hindus are really good at making more Hindus. They make tons of them. So to just make some more Hindus, what's the big deal? You know, like that. You know, Krishna consciousness is nice, but, you know, the astrology, the astronomy, the Ayurveda, you know, this diet, that way of wearing clothes, and all kinds of nice this and that, and so many things. All these things are, you know, great. But the point is that what could be done? In other words, you have the tools for doing something great, and we are settled for doing something not so great simply because, oh, it's numbers. You know, like that. Whatever the consciousness and this and that. That's what we're talking about from that angle. The point is we take the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and in the different situations we find how to preach to the persons who are there. And in this way, based on that, we're able to make so many people come to Krishna consciousness. But the point is one has to know where the root is. It's not in, oh, this technique makes devotees, or that technique. Things that are given by Prabhupada, those work. Other techniques, they'll come and go. You know what I'm saying? It means there'll always be some market for it, but it disappears. It means there's still hippies today, but basically they've disappeared. You know what I'm saying? You know, so different things you can do, but they're always going. They're always disappearing. But what Prabhupada gives, that eternally works. So then how to word that, how to do that, but it's not because you did the words, that's what worked. You sincerely tried to apply Prabhupada's instructions into the particular situation, and then Krishna makes it happen. But if we become attached that, no, I did it in this way, that's why it worked, then the point is okay, then make it work. You know? Because we can say, okay, yoga studio preaching, I know at least two groups of two devotees who, they can make that work like anything and make so many devotees. But most other yoga studios, then they only do some yoga. And even that's not like great yoga. You know it's okay yoga. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that it's not that because they're using the yoga studio form that's why they're making devotees. No, it's because they themselves are, you know, trying to preach Krishna consciousness. And they may use the yoga as an opening, but they don't end there. You know what I'm saying? They don't end with yoga. They end with pure Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? And so that's there. Then, now let's say we have all these devotees that are made by all these different ways of applying Bhagavad Gita as it is. Good. Now, what about preaching to them? What method would you preach to them? Do you need to use yoga? Do you need to use Ayurveda? Do you need to use astrology? you need to use various kinds of dietary considerations.
Depends.
But depends means then, how serious are they as devotees? That means bhajana kriya hasn't really become then serious. Because with bhajana kriya comes anartha nivriti. And if they're unwilling to give up anartas, then how well situated are they? You understand? So that means then, for those who are serious about Krishna consciousness, how do you preach Krishna consciousness? Bhagavad Gita as it is, straight. You know, it means they use, you know, if you're in an English-speaking country, you speak English so that people understand. And you may use, examples so that the particular audience you're talking to understands. And that. But you just talk the Vedantic philosophy straight. Right? So making people into devotees, that's good. And that's special that one can do that. But now what about the rest of that person's life? Then what do we require? So then, in the name of preaching, then those who can follow are giving up. Because it's one thing, you make someone a devotee, okay. Now what? Now he's a devotee. Now he should be able to handle Prabhupada's instructions straight. And if it's about, going this way and that way, and it graduate, okay, great, nice. You got them to devotional service. Now that they're a devotee, then why can't they study Prabhupada straight? And if they say, oh, people won't take it, then who are these people? Are they actually sincerely devotees? So the whole point is that means, okay, in one place they're making a devotee, two devotees here, three devotees there, and over a year they make so many, 10, 20, 30, 50 devotees. That's 50. What about the other tens of thousands that are already devotees? They need Prabhupada's books as they are. And so to say, no, we don't, then that means how sincere are we? The question actually comes up, how sincere then actually are they? It's a matter we have to adjust our life to what those who aren't even new bhaktas yet, just some agyata sukriti, that we have to adjust our life and all that. And then once they do, then we spend our whole life trying to please them as agyata sukritiists, When are they going to come to Sadhu Sangha? When are they going to come to Bhajan Kriya? When are they going to come to Nishta? Right? Prabhupada expected second initiated devotees to be on the platform, Nishta. So Nishta means that we should be able to handle it straight. So at least then, for second initiated devotees, we should do.
So ideally, we would say that those who can attract people should do it, and somebody else can continue the work.
Means, yes. Either they attract and then continue, or they attract and someone else continues. But this idea is that attracting, that's the total package. And then once you've attracted, okay, what are they going to do? We'll train them how to attract others. And nobody gets trained. So, and then how do they stay? They don't know the culture, they don't know the lifestyle, they don't know how to interact, they don't know what are values, they don't know how to judge things. And so what are they left with? Some new age form of... new agey. Some new agey, modern moralistic Hindus. Yeah. And so then, what's so special about that? Like we said, Hindus make Hindus every day. Right, there's 1.2 billion of them, and they did that all on their own without us. So they don't need us to make another 10,000. It's probably every day there's another 10,000 Hindus. Right, so they're doing that quite well. They don't need us for that. So that makes sense. Our movement is to make pure devotees. And the fun difference is, the Hindus who made other Hindus, those as a Hindu community, they do give donations to the temple. But when we make Hindus, they tend to not give anything to the temple. So that's, from all sides, it's just sad. Right?
Continue giving to that.
Yeah.
They have nothing to
Yeah. Okay, so now on part two, Varnashram Dharma instructions for civilized human beings. Okay, so these are instructions for civilized human beings. We're not saying, at least we're not saying we're civilized, so we're just going to discuss what are the instructions for civilized human beings. Right? Chapter 11, The Perfect Society, Four Social Classes. Chapter 12, The Perfect Society, Four Spiritual Classes. Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person. Chapter 14, Ideal Family Life. Chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. Right. So these five chapters, they're all dealing with Varnashram. But we'll tend to not really categorize the last three as that, because it'll be talking about devotional service and all that. These first are just showing how the structure is. Right, and then how to connect that to Krishna, and then it'll go into the details on that. Preface by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. In 10 chapters, the pure inclinations arising from devotion to the Lord. Inclination refers to uti, the fifth topic of Bhagavatam, have been described. In 5 chapters, the excellence of Varnashram for material sustenance is now explained. Right? So he's these five together, explaining Varnashram. In the 11th chapter, Narad Muni describes the duties of the normal Varnas, such as Brahmanas, and also the duties of women and mixed Varnas. Right? So even we get a mention. The normal Varnas, like Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra.
Unmixed.
Yes, and then there's us, Hariva, the mixed varnas, yeah. Right, because duties of women are within the Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, but then there'll also be the consideration as women, the mentality and how they deal and all that. There'll be some different considerations. Okay. Some uniqueness is there. Having explained, great mercy is the cause of inclination to bhakti without mixture of the gunas. In 5 chapters, Narad now explains Nishkam Karma Yoga as the cause of inclination for a type of bhakti which is mixed with the gunas. Right. So, great mercy is called bhakti without mixture of the gunas. Right? So he's just talking about the mentality of just performing your duty. So the Sarva Dharma Paritya Ja. So there's no mix of the gunas there. Right, one is just serving the Lord, and so but within that is already included the engagement of one's activities, because these activities, they themselves may be controlled by the different gunas, but the person performing them is not. And so because of devotion, then they're transcendental. Right? So it's just mechanics. Like the car, the devotee car and the non-devotee car work on the same mechanics. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if you have the devotee bus, the wheels on the bus still go round and round, right? The people in the bus go up and down. It still works the same way, right? No? Yeah. So that's what we're saying. But the focus is simply on pure devotion. The others are just done as a matter of course. Now he's describing about Nishkam Karma Yoga, which means that devotional service is mixed with the gunas. Means now I'm doing this because I have these gunas, I'm attached to these gunas. But what's being described is Nishkam Karma Yoga. That I'm doing this, the idea that the results are for the Supreme. But I like doing these activities. Does that make sense? So there's a difference there. Right? And then Sakam is down from that. I like doing the activities because I want the results of these activities. But I'm willing to turn to the Lord for this. And ultimately it's about the Lord. Right, so then one will progress from Sakam to Nishkam to then this point of what Prahlad Maharaj is unalloyed, a Haitugi Bhakti. Yes? Yes.
You say that technically Nishkam Karma can be up to the level of Bhava even?
You would say the Madhyama platform would be functioning on that. Means unless it's Nishkam, basically you won't be a Madhyama. If you're doing it for yourself, then you'll be Sakam, you'll be neophyte. Right? But you could have neophytes who are performing Nishkam Karma Yoga. It's just they may not know so much about the Shastra and things like that. they're doing it, they have the faith, they're doing it in that way, but they may not be able to explain it and so nicely. So means a Madhyama would necessarily be Nishkam. The neophyte may or may not be Nishkam.
But can we say also that 75% is the Madhyama?
Yes.
They are not the Sagat.
So yes, so you would say that
can be still Sakam.
That's there, but the point is we're talking about means.
Okay.
Means if the Sakam's important, it brings it down to the neophyte. If it's not important but it's there, then that brings it to the Madhyama.
Where's the emphasis?
Yeah, where the emphasis is. That's the point. So we're not saying it's not engaged. Because the point is, the activities are engaged in all three levels. But on the first level, it's because of the result you want from it. The second one is because of the method itself. The third one is just to please Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So you could say the Madhyama is attached to the method, while the neophyte's attached to the result. So that's why the Madhyama will actually be better at the method than the neophyte. Because the neophyte just wants the result, so he's not worried so much how he gets it done as long as he gets the result. While the Madhyama, the process is important, so they will do it properly. Because it's Nishkam, the results for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So if you have a higher standard, then you might do a better job for yourself. But how many people do a better job for themselves? Some people do, not so many. But the Madhyama would do a better job because it's for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, chapter 11. The Perfect Society, Four Social Classes. Pratigya. For peace and happiness in the material world, the Varnashram institution must be introduced, right? So we can say peace and happiness, we can say, you know, but what about for pure devotion? It says, no, engaging Varnashram in the Lord's service, that will give you devotion. Varnashram system itself, the mechanics of it, will create peace and happiness, right? So we could say, well, that's Maya, but then basically that's what the community is based on, right? They want a peaceful environment in which they're happy. Happy means I got plenty of stuff.
Peaceful mind.
Yes, and then because I have all the stuff, therefore I'm peaceful. Right? Does that make sense? So, the point is this is the method to get it. All these other discussions on we do this and that, no, it's a modern, you can't do all that, all useless. You can probably say absolutely useless, because I haven't seen where's the more money. I've seen people who follow these things, get in there and do it, they're the ones with the money. Right? You want a business to work, you have to work really, really hard. Right? This idea is, no, we'll just sit around and we'll have meetings about the business and then somehow or another money should just come in. I've never seen it happen. Right? The person who goes out there, works hard, they get the money. So what are they doing? Are they doing something different? Oh, it's the modern age, so they don't do business like they used to do. Means they don't buy things cheaper than they sell them. Right? They don't make it available. They don't, you know, somehow or another find what people are interested in and then provide it. They don't do any of that. They just sit around, have meetings and discuss, well, we could do that, maybe that, but, you know, oh, I saw in the news that people are thinking like this, so maybe that's not nice. And do they make any money? No. So why? Because they're following the rules that Varnashram says. They may not know it, but that's why they're getting. So anybody who is successful, because they're following an aspect of Varnashram. Anywhere where they're not successful, because they're not following. That's just how the mechanics of the material world work. And we can say that as an absolute. People may say, oh, but what about this? And what? But the point is does that apply to yourself? Oh, but I heard about this guy, you know, he did nothing and he got so much money, you know, he was digging out in his backyard, you know, like that because, you know, his dog, you know, did something and dug up something and then he found this treasure and now he's a billionaire and this and that. But the whole point is would he have gotten that if he didn't dig? You know, he worked. So the point is he asked him, Karna, and done that. So great, okay, so now everybody should just go out in their backyard and dig around. And then when you find your treasure and you're the billionaire, great. Hopefully you'll give something to Krishna, right? We have the TLVP here. We got lots of, you know, we got lots of things we can do. And it's like that. So, you know, we'd be happy if everybody would just remember, right? Does that make sense? Yeah? But it sounds great, but who's doing it? So that's the point. You follow the rules, it works. That means they followed the rules in the last life. There was still some results left over. So they get it this life. But if you're not getting it like that, that means you have to do the work. Right? You have to follow the system, get the results. Does that make sense? It's really straightforward, very practical. This is science. And they'll say, no, no, but this is not, but what about, isn't that sentiment? We're saying, here it is, take it. No, no, but, so which is the science and which is sentiment? And due to the mode of ignorance, it turns around. Oh, we're the sentimentalists because we're attached to these things. You know, we're just doing the modern thing because that has to be done and this is how it is. But the people who talk about it are not the ones that are getting anything done. Guarantee. Bring an actual successful businessman. Talk about these things. Talk about the fundamentals of the mechanics, how it works. They'll agree completely. Bring a person who doesn't all know about, you know, we have to consider all, you know, all this and what about, and we can't just do. That's the person who does not make anything. Right? No? Except for global warming. That they're doing well. Yes.
But this is also why the temple meetings are so boring.
Yes. Yes. Because the temple meeting is supposed to be istagosti, which means discussion about Krishna. But somehow or another, temple presidents worked it out. It's just a management meeting to get done whatever they want to get done. So, therefore, they're boring. I remember our istagostis in our temple were nectar devotion. And they would just read from there and go through and discuss different things like that. And so that was an istagosti. When you saw that people weren't so focused on their chanting, then, you know, that was the discussion. Or they weren't cooperating well, then you discuss on that. And it wasn't about management and who's going to do what and who's taking out the garbage this week. And now it is, of course it's going to be boring. You just put it on, you can put it on a piece of paper, put it on the note board, and people will get more out of it than the meeting. Right? In reality. But because people want to feel good, and I said something, and so that therefore the meeting has some emotional benefit. But as far as practicality,
sadly our nectar devotion classes turned into meetings. While we're all here, let's first discuss.
Yeah. Oh, in your temple. Yeah. No, ours was just straight. It was interesting like that. But I heard other temples it wasn't like that. But
yeah. Some was 1 year too. So.
That's also cool. Chapter 11 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaja Yudhishthira asked Narada Muni question 7.13 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 7.13. Okay, from Bhagavatam 7.11, 2 through 4. Maharaja Yudhishthira said, "My dear Lord, I wish to hear from you about the principles of religion by which one can attain the ultimate goal of life, devotional service." Right? That's the point of Varnashram. But we're pointing it out as we're using the gunas in doing that. What is the conditioning? Therefore, according to that, we choose, we understand the gunas. We understand, therefore, what that nature can do. But, as we said, that can be done on three levels. Right? Sakam, Nishkam, or unalloyed devotion. Right? "I wish to hear about the general occupational duties of human society and the system of social and spiritual advancement known as Varnashram Dharma." Right? Manu opens with the same question. We want to hear about Varnashram Dharma and how you can get you to, know the Lord. How you can understand the Lord. So that's the point. So it's the same instructions. Those will be given by Brihaspati. These were given by Narada Muni. The same instructions were given by the Lord to Brahma. Brahma gave to all 10 sons. The sages came and asked in the court of Brahma. Bhrigu explained it. And now here the question is, that same question is asked again to Narad Muni. Now he explains it. So we can say it's the same instructions. Just because it's in Bhagavatam, the point of pure devotion is being brought out. Right? In Manu, then it's the form, the mechanics of it are given, its connection to the Lord is given, but it's not focusing, consists always on pure devotion. It's just having made the connection, now the details are being given. Somebody say? Narad Muni answers this question through the rest of the canto. So these five chapters finish the canto then?
Yes.
Okay. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the general principles by following which a human being, and specifically one who is interested in advancing in spiritual life, can become perfect. By hearing about the characteristics of Prahlad Maharaj, Maharaj Yudhishthira became extremely pleased. Now he inquired from Narad Muni about the actual religion of a human being and about special characteristics of Varnashram Dharma, which marks the highest status of human civilization. Right? The highest status of human civilization. Right? But then, you know, then we take it up. That's the civilization itself. Now what's the perfection of that civilization is not just Dharma or Moksha, but is Bhakti. But the civilization itself, how mechanically well it will run, then the, you know, it's here. Highest status. When Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Narad Muni about these matters, Narad Muni stopped giving his own statements and quoted statements by Lord Narayana, for he is the supreme authority for giving religious codes. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.19. Every human being is expected to acquire 30 qualities, such as truthfulness, mercy, and austerity. The process of following the principles of religion is known as Sanatana Dharma, the eternal religious system. So following it in connection with the Lord, that's Sanatana Dharma. That's Varnashram Dharma. So Varnashram Dharma means Sanatana Dharma. Now, because it's so efficient for creating peace and happiness within the material world, therefore the demons also use it, but they use it without the connection to the Lord. So it's not Sanatana Dharma, it's just Dharma. And that's why they are so successful. Does that make sense? So everywhere in the whole universe, all 14 planetary systems, they all use Varnashram Dharma. They're all peaceful. They're all happy. Right? Only here on 1/9, you know, of, how you say, Bharatvarsha. No, Bharatvarsha, which is 1/9 of Jambudvipa. So 181st of one island of Bhumandala out of 7. Right?
Right.
So, you know, an 81st of 7. So,
but it's the smallest one.
Yeah, and it's the smallest one also. Yeah. And it's also the Varshas is one of the smaller ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that. The northern Kurus is also the same. Yeah, so that, you know, so. So then it's the only place where people think that by not using it we'll be happy. But everywhere else in the universe they're a bit smarter. The Varnashram system delineates the divisions of Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. It also sets forth the system of samskaras. The Garbhadham samskar, the ceremony for begetting a child, must be observed by the higher section of people, namely the dvijas. Right? It says must. Baba doesn't say, well, if you like, and you know, if you think it's politically correct, then you can kind of do it, and you know, don't be fanatic, and you know, right? Baba doesn't say that. One who follows the Garbhadham samskar is actually twice born. But those who do not, who deviate from the principles of Varnashram Dharma, are called dvija bandhus. The principal occupations for a Brahmin are worshipping the deity, teaching others how to worship the deity, studying the Vedic scriptures, teaching the Vedic scriptures, accepting charity from others, and again, giving charity to others. A Brahmana should make his livelihood from these six occupational duties. The duty of a Kshatriya is to give protection to the citizens and levy taxes upon them, but he is forbidden to tax the Brahmanas. The members of the Krishna Conscious Movement should therefore be exempt from government taxation. Kshatriyas may tax everyone but the Brahmanas. Vaishyas should cultivate the land, produce food grains, and protect the cows. Whereas the Shudras, who by quality never become Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, or Vaishyas, should serve the three higher classes and be satisfied. Other means of livelihood are also prescribed for the Brahmanas. And these are Forshilana, Yayavara, Shila, and Unchana. Each of these occupational duties is successfully better. Right, so I guess we'll get into the detail when it comes.
Yep.
Yes. One who is, means of all these, the ones that are mentioned above, then to study the scriptures, teach, is then considered the best. And then these other ones that are mentioned, these other four, then that is just how that you can do those. But the point is that still, that doesn't mean that you're studying or teaching. It just means you're maintaining yourself. So how you're maintaining yourself, that's better.
What's the proportion of studying and teaching?
The proportion of studying and teaching. Means
sometimes you study more, teach less.
Just depends on their position. But teaching more is always good. But it's important what else is, because teaching means whatever is going to be something, whether it's a formal class, whether it's the Bhagavatam where it's going out and preaching, whether it's talking to devotees, inspiring them in Krishna consciousness. Like that. So any of those would be along that line. One who is in a lower grade of social life cannot accept the provision of a higher class unless necessary. In times of emergency, all the classes but the Kshatriyas may accept professional duties of others. This the means of livelihood known as Rita Shilochana. Oh, that's Shila. Okay. Amrita Ayachita. Mrita, Yacha, Yachnya, Pramrita, Karshana, and Satyanrita, Vanijya, may be accepted by everyone but the Kshatriyas. For a Brahmin or Kshatriya engaging in the service of Vaishyas or Shudras is considered the profession of dogs. Right? Because you may see as the Kshatriyas may do something for Brahmins, Brahmins may do something for Kshatriyas. That's considered okay, but dropping below that as an occupation, that's considered, that's called Satyanrita, Svavrita, the occupation of the dog. Nard Muni also described that the symptoms of a Brahmana is controlled senses. The symptoms of a Kshatriya are power and fame. The symptom of a Vaishya is service to the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, and the symptoms of a Shudra is service to the three higher classes. The qualifications for a woman is to be very faithful and chaste wife. In this way, Nard Muni described the characteristics of higher and lower grades of people and recommended that one follow the principles of his caste or his hereditary occupation. One cannot suddenly give up a profession to which he is accustomed, and therefore it is recommended that one gradually be awakened. The symptoms of Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras are very important, and therefore one should be designated only by these symptoms, not by birth. Right? So the qualifications they have is the actual main point. Someone has these qualifications and can function in that, means practically apply them, then they should be identified in that category. Does that make sense? Not by birth. Right? Generally by birth, generally they would have those qualities. But it's not that by birth, that's what makes it. So if someone's born in a particular family, you would generally consider them there until you see the qualities develop. And if the qualities are developed, then you would continue thinking of them like that. But if the qualities are manifest as something else, then they would be identified in that way. Does that make sense?
All right. Women and varnas, they also have their varnas.
They have their varnas, means they have their nature, but the occupation they'll be performing generally will be depending upon on what family they marry into. Right? It's just like you see Devahuti. She's from a Kshatriya family, but she marries Kardama, so therefore she's performing Brahminical duties. But it doesn't mean that she doesn't have a Kshatriya nature. That's why it's always recommended that they be matched. But to say, women have no varna, that may mean as an occupation, but they do have varna by nature. Because we see here's the qualities. Right? It? Brahman, control of the senses. Kshatriya, power and fame. Vaishya, service of the Brahman. So you see by that what's the nature. So the Brahman will have that, but the woman who's a Brahman will also have that. So that's why generally a Brahman woman is matched to a Brahman man. Then they work very nicely, because if you don't, then it starts to make a problem. If it's one down, then they'll take on the nature of the woman. If it's one up, then they become a whole other species. Right? And if it's two down, three down, you know, or anything up, then they're different species than what the parents are. So if parents are wondering, why my kids like not like us, you know, so different, that's because the parents aren't matched, so therefore their child is actually a third species. They're two species, and they end up with a third. You understand? But if they're the same, then they're one species, their child is the same.
How do you make the children better species?
Making them Krishna conscious.
Being Krishna conscious.
Being Krishna conscious yourself.
Still the nature.
Yeah, but otherwise, if you want to do that, then over seven generations, you can get the Shudra, a Brahmin who's then married, and the Ishada back up to the Brahminical platform over seven lifetimes. You get the Kshatriya back over five. You get the Vaishya back over three lifetimes. Shudra's already Shudra. You don't have to worry. So you can do it by the mechanical process, but like we said, it takes lifetimes. Okay. Designation by birth is strictly forbidden by Narad Muni and all great personalities. Does that make sense? So they're Brahmin parents, then they have a child, you would expect them to be Brahmin, so you're going to deal with them until such time as you start to see what is their nature. Right, so then how they're manifesting the nature in school, you'll deal with them like that. Then when they graduate from school and they go out into the world, then how they function there, that's going to be the actual designation. Does that make sense? Because while they're in the school, it may be one thing. While they're out, it's another thing. Right? Because all of the things are there, because in the brahmachari world, nothing's really that important. So whatever you're interested in, you all do that. But to make money out of it, that's another thing. Like brahmacharis love to eat, right? So it's not necessarily they're going to make a great occupation out of eating. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So like that, you know, playing all day, not getting anything done. You know, these are all standard, you know, how you say, brahmachari occupations. Yes, you know, so, but it's not necessarily they're going to make much out of that. Does that make sense? You know, the kid loves mridanga, he plays mridanga all day, but it doesn't mean he'll be a musician. You know, he gets out of the school and he becomes a businessman. You know, but as a hobby, he likes music. Right? So that's why you see, you take what is there from the parents and see how they act there. Then you see how they act in the educational system. Then you see after. And that's how you designate. So birth is not actually is never the consideration. Right? So when you're taking born in the Brahmin family, you're taking it by association. Right? Then you see. If it works, then great. And if not, then, you know, they're defined according to their position. Shloka Anusharanam. Summary of verses 1 to 35. Narad Muni explains the four varnas. Verses 1 to 35. Narad Muni explains the four varnas. Sukadeva Goswami continued. If there's a gap, then sometimes it works. Yeah. But if it's not like this,
it's just one.
Yes, I think that. Sukadeva Goswami continued. After hearing about the activities and character of Prahlad Maharaj, which are adored and discussed among great personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Yudhishthira Maharaj, the most respected king among exalted personalities, again inquired from the great Saint Narad Muni in a mood of great pleasure. Maharaj Yudhishthira said, "My dear Lord, I wish to hear from you about the principles of religion by which one can attain the ultimate goal of life, devotional service. I wish to hear about the general occupational duties of human society and the system of social and spiritual advancement known as Varnashram Dharma," right? Social and spiritual. So the ashram is the spiritual, The varna is the social, right? So that's why you can never have management will make things work, because it's a social position. It can make things socially function, but actually, spiritually, that has to be the quality of the ashram, quality of the character, the sadhana, the devotional attitude. Does that make sense? But because technically, you can hire people to do these other things. You know what I'm saying? You can. But, you know, it's just like there's some plumbing. You hire a plumber. You don't have to do it yourself. Does that make sense? Yeah. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Sanatanam means that which remains after the result is achieved. Right? So Sanatan Dharma means what will result after the Dharma is attained, the result of Dharma. That's going to be the bhakti. So Sanatan Dharma means bhakti. It refers to bhakti yoga, which is not given up after achieving prema. I also want to hear about Varnashram Dharma. Because he's mentioning through Varnashram Dharma, then we can elevate ourselves to, you know, in devotional service. It's not that the Varnashram is what makes you advance. It's using a Varnashram in devotional service that you advance. Right? By using Varnashram, then you become peaceful and happy. Right? By devotion, that's how you get understand the Lord. Does that make sense? So bhakti comes from bhakti. And you want peace and happiness, that comes from Varnashram. Okay. Srila Prabhupada adds, we have several times explained that the eternal occupational duty of the living being is, indeed, it has been explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Surup Hoy Krishner Nitya Das. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 2108. The real occupational duty of the living entity is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if one prefers to deviate from this principle, he remains a servant because that is his eternal position. But one serves Maya, the illusory material energy. So one doesn't serve Krishna directly, he serves his Maya, and so one stays in Maya. Right? The Krishna conscious movement, therefore, is an attempt to guide human society to serving the personality of Godhead instead of serving the material world with no real profit. Our actual experience is that every man, animal, bird, and beast, indeed every living entity, is engaged in rendering service. Even though one's body or one's superficial religion may change, every living entity is always engaged in the service of someone. Therefore, the mentality of service is called the eternal occupational duty. This eternal occupational duty can be organized through the institution of Varnashram, in which there are four Varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and four Ashramas, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Thus, Yudhishthira Maharaj inquired from Narad Muni about the principles of Sanatana Dharma for the benefit of human society. Right? So, everybody is going to serve. The Varnashram is how to scientifically organize it so that everybody is serving. Because as we mentioned this morning, economically, then we want to put that on the top. But actually, economics has to be a form of service, not of control. When it's used as control, it's not service, so therefore it's not Varnashram. When it's used as service, that's Varnashram. When administration is used as service, then it's Varnashram. When knowledge becomes certain, then it's Varnashram. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that these things are meant for service, because that's the occupation. And since the eternal occupation is devotion, therefore rendering service to please the Lord, then a combination becomes Sanatana Dharma, or this Varnashram system. Does that make sense? We catch the logic that's here? Like that. Okay, so into it. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanta Gaura Prabhupada ki.